Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. Hey guys, welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Got an amazing episode lined up for you today with Tony Jeffries. Now, Tony is an all-round badass. He was an Olympic medalist. He's the co-owner and founder of Box and Burn. He's a 7-time national and European boxing champion. He's undefeated pro boxer. And I wanted to say thank you to him for giving up his time today for me, going into his gym, sitting down and asking him a number of questions. And I know you guys are going to love the answers to these. And this was an enjoyable episode, something that I was really looking forward to on my trip here to LA. So make sure you sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. As always, if you do enjoy the episode, take a screenshot, post it on your Instagram story, and tag myself and Tony so we can get your feedback. But for now, that's it for me. I'm done talking. Let's get stuck into the episode. All right, Tony, mate, thanks for joining me on the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. It's a pleasure to be in your presence, mate.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, mate.
Absolute pleasure. So, guys, as I mentioned in the intro to the podcast, Tony is an absolute boxing champion. I believe 7 times national champion, Olympic medalist, undefeated as a professional boxer.
Yeah, undefeated as a pro. Won the European Championships as well.
Just add a few in there. Yeah. That's awesome, man. So, give us a bit of a rundown on how it all started. So, how did your boxing career start? What age did you start?
So, ever since I learned to walk, my granddad used to get me in a boxing stance and try and show me how to box. And when I was 10, that's how old you had to be to go to the boxing gym. I got took to the boxing gym, and that's when it started, you know. And then competed for 17 years. I had 106 fights in my career, and then unfortunately, it come to a crashing end where I hurt my hands and I had surgery, couldn't recover, and that's when I retired.
So what was the hand injury that you had?
So I had a hole in one knuckle, and then I had a tear in the other tendon in the other knuckle. So I got surgery on both hands.
And that's just from repetitive impact?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. People don't realise that the thing that takes the most punishment...
Knocking too many people out.
Yeah. The thing that takes the most punishment in boxing is your hands, because you're constantly pounding them, and I don't think your hands were made to punch stuff, you know? So, That's what happened.
And something that I wanted to ask you about is, this is something that I've been interested in as well. So when you go into a training camp for a professional fight or any fight, how long do you particularly give yourself for that camp? Obviously, right. It might chop and change depending on how soon you find out you've got a match lined up, but how long is a camp usually?
Yeah, they're normally 6 to 8 weeks, the training camps as a professional. But as an amateur, like a world-class amateur, which I was when I went to the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games and all that, you know, you're fighting every other month, so you're constantly ticking over, you're constantly keeping fit and keeping ready. You might have a week off, or even the week off, you're still working, you know. So for the pros, it's normally 8 weeks. For the amateurs, you know, you're constantly just consistently fit and in shape.
And what was your least favorite part about a training camp? Like, do you enjoy the training side of things, or do you just enjoy the fighting, or is there bits where you just absolutely dread turning up to training, or what was your mindset around that?
All of it, mate. I'm telling you, I didn't like training, I didn't like dieting, I didn't like thinking about their opponents and the fight, because you constantly think about it from the second you wake up in the morning to the second you go to bed, it's on your mind about the fights and all that. I didn't really like any of it, you know.
Okay.
It's like what Muhammad Ali says, you know, every minute of training. And I really didn't enjoy it, you know, but when you actually do fight and you win and you get your hand raised at the end of the fight, you know, there's no better feeling, and it makes all that sacrifice.
It's an addictive feeling. Yeah.
It's like a drug, you know, you want that feeling all the time. And obviously when I retired, that was the hardest thing, not going to get that high anymore. But I really didn't like the training. But I love the winning, you know.
Amazing. And throughout your career, you've obviously done a number of unreal things. So there's obviously been a lot of highs, but I'm sure there's been a lot of lows. So in your eyes, what was the highest of highs and what was the lowest of lows?
The highest of highs was definitely winning the Olympic medal. You know,
it was 2008, yeah?
Yeah, 2008 in Beijing. I was in that the fight to get into the quarterfinals, to get into the semi-finals, to get the bronze medal, and You know, I knew I was like 8 points up in the last, going into the last 10 seconds of the round, because the last 10 seconds of the fight, because the crowd's chanting down 10, 9, 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just knew once that bell rings, I've got to win the Olympic medal, you know. So when that bell rang, there was no better one moment feeling in my life than just that time there, you know. I was on an 8-year training program for the Olympics. 8 years. And to get through the full 8 years and to achieve my goal.
Get the reward at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing.
And what was the lowest of lows? I'm going to say, aside from having to hang up the gloves, what was the lowest of lows?
I lost in Melbourne in the Commonwealth Games in 2006. I lost to a Scottish guy, and I should have won the fight. And that was in the quarterfinals. My third fight in the week.
Third in one week. And how many rounds in a Commonwealth?
Four rounds.
Okay.
And with losing that fight, I trained so hard for that, and I really expected to get a gold medal in Melbourne, and you know, I never got the gold, and that was the hardest moment for me in boxing.
And so, what's the process mentally and physically after a loss? So last night, I've watched this a couple of times, but last night I was watching Conor McGregor's documentary, and one of my favorite parts of the documentary is after he loses to Nate Diaz, right. And like you see the emotions that he goes through, and you know, he was pretty humble when he lost and stuff like that. But what are the physical and mental? What's the process once you lose a fight?
It's really, really tough, you know. I think when you lose a fight, you're really hard on yourself, and you've got to really try and pick yourself up. But there's like I said, there's no worse feeling, really. You just feel like a failure. You've put everything in for the 8 weeks or however long it may be for this one moment, and then not get your hand raised. It's horrible.
Yeah,
it really is. It takes some getting over. It normally takes you to fight again and win to be able to get over that.
So do you find yourself you know, just hoping that, or like kind of searching for that next fight straight away? And are you the type of person that would be back in the gym, you know, a couple of days later, getting back into the swing of things and figuring out what you need to do to improve to win that next one?
Yeah. You know, when I've lost fights in the past, I don't know, I'm just down. I feel really down, and you want to get back in the gym and you want to work and learn. But I felt like when I've won a fight, I learn more from winning than losing, which it's supposed to be the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, I win a fight, I go in the gym, and my confidence is high, and I feel really good. You know, it's really tough to when you've lost a fight and you feel like you're a loser, you know, to pick yourself up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the process physically with recovery after a fight, regardless of whether you win or lose? So from the moment that you get back into the rooms, what's the process with recovery?
I mean, after the fight, you normally forget about recovery and go and get drunk. eat loads of shitty food and get drunk. And and you might put loads of weight on, which I used to do. But, after training, recovery is very important.
Because
in boxing, you train 2-3 times a day, so you've got to be recovered for your next session. So I'm a big fan of ice baths. Even now, I like to get cold therapy and do stuff like that. You know, I think that's really good.
Have you done cryotherapy before?
I've done cryotherapy. I think ice baths is much better than cryotherapy. Have you? What about you?
Yeah, I've done both as well. Like I haven't done cryo as much as I've done ice baths. I think definitely what I've found, anyways, for any form of, like, if I've got like a bruise or like a knock or something like that, ice bath is more effective for me, which I'm assuming for you is probably what you're after. I do enjoy cryo, and I think I've been looking into it a lot more, and the benefits seem to be quite good with cryo. But yeah, I guess it's each to their own.
Yeah. I think as well, for an ice bath, it's a lot mentally. You've got to be mentally stronger to get an ice bath. So it's harder to get in.
It is.
And it lasts longer. Well, if you're in for like, I mean, I get in for like 8 minutes.
Okay.
It's tough. Where the cryotherapy is like 2 minutes. Is that right?
maybe 2-3 minutes. It's basically the length of a song. Every time I do it, they tell you to pick a song. Oh, and really? By the time the song's up, you're out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've even been, I don't know if this is something you do, and I think I mentioned it on maybe the last podcast, but I've been forcing myself to have like a fully cold shower. Either every morning or every night. And it's, sometimes it's not even about the physical thing. Like you said, it's almost like that mental thing about forcing yourself to do it. And then each time you do it, you kind of build up more and more discipline to actually do the shit you don't want to do.
Yeah. I'm massive on cold showers. I get one every single morning for that reason. But I think it really wakes you up and helps you with alertness. And it's like a challenge, you know. If you get through that challenge, you automatically feel good about yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And I love it. I had Ryan Munsey. Do you know Ryan Munsey? He was a good podcast, a big podcast. On my podcast now. And I asked him, like, because he's always talking about biohacking and that stuff.
Yeah,
and
says,
What's a biohack for when you're feeling down and you're really low? Is to get a cold shower.
Okay.
For that reason, where it helps you mentally and you get past that challenge.
Yeah.
And it really does. If you're in a cold shower, last thing you can think of is your problems or whatever you've got going on, you know, because you're
sitting there fucking getting out.
Yeah, exactly. So it clears your mind. It's kind of like a form of meditation in a way where you clear your mind from everything else.
Yeah.
So I'm a massive, massive fan of cold showers.
Yeah. When you are minutes or just moments from entering the ring before a fight, let's say a professional fight, especially something like the Olympics, what's going through your brain? Like, what's the process?
Yeah.
What's the thought process?
You know, you think about... it's a pretty vulnerable moment when you're going into the changing rooms with your trainer before the fight, because your trainer is the one person you trust the most, and it's kind of on him to give you the right advice and words to make you feel good, you know.
Yeah.
You're thinking like about the hard work you've done, everything you've went through and put your body through, and thinking about your game plan and what you're going to do. It always pops into your head, what the fuck am I doing this for? Why am I doing this? This is the last time I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And I was just with a really high-profile fighter, a really accomplished fighter last week, Stephen Smith, and he said the same. Even now, like, he even thinks, like, why the fuck am I doing this? And then it comes into your head, then it goes.
Goes,
you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're about to get in the ring in front of thousands of people and have a fight. You know, why the hell are you doing this?
Yeah.
But yeah, that goes, and then... and then you feel good about yourself, and then I just used to think, like, I'm going to hurt this guy. I really am. But as well, I was thinking, I can't get hit with this punch. If I'm fighting a guy who's got a great left hook of the body, that's in the back of my mind. I'm not going to get hit with that one punch, you know?
Yeah, and I'm assuming this is just kind of fight by fight, but the saying is everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
So what is the... Is that a hard thing to get over? Like, you obviously go into a fight, you know your opponent probably in and out by the time you get in the ring with them, and you've got a plan of attack, and then you do cop one to the chin, or one kind of dazes you a bit. How hard is it to then regain your focus and go back to the plan?
Yeah, you know, no, it is hard, and you've got a game plan, you get in the ring, and like, with me, I've got a really good jab, which is a straight left hand, and I used to know that if I can land my jab cleanly, I'll find my range and I can land my other shots. And when I couldn't land that jab, it was frustrating and it was tough. And it's really hard to change your game plan up when you're in the ring. Like if you can't land these punches, but it's something with experience, you know. Like I said, 106 fights, I've got a lot of experience. When you're in there, you just change the game plan without really thinking about it. And it's funny that to Mike Tyson, seeing what you're saying, like, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. If you get a punch in the face of Mike Tyson, it's going to be a little bit different, you know. But as a boxer...
Probably not much thinking going on after
this. Right, exactly. But as a boxer, you get used to getting punched in the face. Like, now if you put a glove on and punch me in the face, I wouldn't really feel it. But if I put one on and just punched you in the face, I don't know if you've been punched in the face before.
I'll take your word for it, but
yeah. But you're like, oh, fuck, that hurt.
Yeah.
But for a boxer, you kind of get conditioned to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of big athletes, even like performers and people that speak in front of, you know, lots of people and I guess professionals in their field that do get nervous before events, say that as soon as they're on stage or as soon as that that whistle blows or as soon as the bell rings in the ring, all that nerves just goes. And as soon as you throw that first punch, it's just you know, you've tunnel vision and, right. and you're in. Is that what you were like when you were in the ring? Were you much of a nervous fighter, or did you just kind of get on with the job?
I mean, I got a little bit nervous and all that. It was when you're sitting getting your hands wrapped, that's when it used to, the nerves used to kick in, but then they'd go. But then, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? When you're in the ring or when you're on stage or whenever you do, the nerves go. I wonder why that is. Why is it? Probably because you can't think of anything else. You've got to be focused, right?
Thinking about your studio, yeah.
You're in it right then, so maybe that's what it is.
I think it's that manifestation of you think you're like building up that much hype around what you're about to do that you're kind of talking yourself into being nervous, when in actual fact it's, especially if you're someone that speaks or yourself that box or someone that's a professional athlete, you do this shit day in, day out. You know it like the back of your hand. So in the end of the day, you're going up there to do something that you do every single day. The only difference is that there's people watching.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that thing that you build up in your brain that you kind of psych yourself out almost.
Yeah, and as soon as you get in there, it just goes.
You're off. This is going to benefit myself, but I'm sure it's going to benefit a lot of people listening and watching as well. For the average Joe who just likes to do a boxing class, or maybe does a bit of sparring even, or just is into their boxing, what are some tips that you can give to help improve
boxing?
Yeah, all around, like nothing in particular, but even whether it's breathing, foot position, hands, whatever.
Like the same thing with boxing is the same thing in everything, in business, in every single sport is. Being consistently practicing the basics. You know, you see too many people try to get in boxing, try to get flash and try to get ahead of themselves. When let's just work on the jab. Let's work on the 1-2 hook. You know, let's get that really perfect and be consistent with that, and everything else will follow. You know, rather than trying to get ahead of yourself. And like I say, it's the same in business. You've got to be consistently doing the basic shit. Good.
Do the small things well consistently. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's the same with boxing. You know, and that's how you get better and better and better. So yeah, definitely just keep working on the basics. Try not to do all these fancy flash combinations you might see on Instagram, and try and just get the basic 1-2 down.
And you've got a good, I was actually looking through some of the videos on your YouTube the last couple of days, so I'll make sure I put the link, and you've obviously got your podcast and everything as well, so I'll put the link to those in the show notes and in the YouTube notes as well, guys. But the next question I had was around nutrition. So something that I obviously talk about a lot on the show is nutrition, the importance of a well-balanced diet, but also fueling your body for performance and recovery. So when you were fighting, what was your kind of, what did you gravitate towards in terms of your approach to food?
Yeah, I used to, now let me start off by saying this, like I really don't envy nutritionists, because there's a lot of different opinions on nutrition, and there's a lot of arguments for nutrition, you know, with different diets coming and going all the time, you know, so I don't envy you being involved with that. But yeah, in boxing, it was just eating clean was basically lots of veg, lots of chicken, chicken breasts and all that, with the oatmeal in the morning for the breakfast, you know, trying to keep off the sugars and drinking a shit ton of water, you know, and having a cheat meal once a week on a Saturday, you know, going having a pizza or an Indian or whatever, which again, like now I'm hearing, so I was on no carbs after lunch. Diet, you know?
Even
when I was training.
Okay.
And I used to make the weight and it used to work for me, but now I'm hearing that's not the way you should have really done it, you know, with the new things that are coming up with a high fat diet.
Like you said, there's just so many different approaches and there's no one size fits all, which is good, which is a good and bad thing. It'd be awesome if you could just say to everyone, this is what you have to do and it's going to work for every single person on the planet. But unfortunately, that's not the way it is. And what works for you may not work for me. What works for me may not work for someone else. And if you find an approach that works for you, regardless of whether someone says it's the best approach or not, then what? There's no real reason to change it. But you're right. There are so many different ways to approach it these days.
And this was like 8 years ago since I retired. I'm not in the last 8 years, how much has it changed? Like I never even thought about putting butter in my coffee, you know, and I do it all the time now.
Yeah, okay.
and you know, people's got different views on that. What do you think about that?
I'm not a large fan. So my approach to nutrition is basically a flexible approach. So I believe in roughly knowing your numbers, like you would with business, like you would with anything. You fuel your body like it's a car, give yourself good quality fuel. I think there's flexibility needs to be a part of it. So if you're someone that's saying, all right, I really like ice cream, but I'm not meant to eat ice cream, so I'm not going to. Eventually, you're going to eat it and you're going to binge on it. So my opinion is keep a small amount in there as long as it works with your numbers, and keep everything in moderation, because if it's not sustainable, if it's not flexible, then it's not sustainable in my in my approach. So I think 90% of your intake should be coming from nutrient-dense whole foods. I think protein is extremely important, but when it comes to the ratio of carbs and fats, I don't think it's as important as people think it is. Like butter in your coffee, like if you enjoy butter in your coffee and there's obviously some health benefits to it, then like go for it.
Right.
But in my opinion, I wouldn't do it just because I see it as, one, I can't imagine liking the taste of it, and two, I've never tried it. I think two, it's almost like, in my eyes, it's almost like just a weight, like you're just adding, making a drink that's very low calorie, a very high calorie drink by adding butter to it. But like I said, there's different methods that work for different people, and there are pros and cons to everything. You can type in on Google today, what six reasons why butter in your coffee is good, or six reasons why butter in your coffee is shit, and you're going to get a shitload of answers for both. So in the end of the day, it comes down to personal preference. But it's interesting, isn't it?
What's the best one food in the world?
Best food?
Yeah, one piece of food or fruit or veg or whatever it would be. You only pick one.
Only pick one. I'm going to have to go with, my vegans and vegetarians aren't going to like this, but I'm going to have to go with steak.
Right.
A lean red meat. Red meat. Amino acids, protein. But this is kind of just goes on to what I was saying before. Like with, I don't necessarily look at, like, put it this way. There's no foods that will make you lose fat, and there's no foods that will make you gain weight. If you have too much food, you will gain weight. Yeah. If you eat less food than your body is burning, then you will lose weight. It's as kind of simple as that. So when people come to me and say, what should I eat? I want to lose fat. Like, or what should I avoid? I say, eat the foods that you enjoy, but this is the intake you need to work with. Right. And if you're in that range, then I guarantee you'll see results. And for them, it's kind of like, this is good because I don't feel like I'm restricted. I don't feel like I'm like on a diet. I think if you're on a diet, you're going to come off a diet.
So
my approach is to basically just change the amounts that I'm eating depending on what my goal is. If I want to get bigger, then I'll eat more of the stuff that I usually eat. If I want to lose fat, I'll eat less of that stuff. So that's my approach. And like I said, it could be different for you. It could be different for everyone. But if it's not sustainable, then you're just not going to stick to it in the long term. I just find if you're following an approach that you don't think that you could do for the rest of your life, then what's the point?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
People are always looking for quick fixes. That's the problem.
I know, right? Like me, I'm like, burn more calories than you intake, and then you lose weight, right?
Yeah, in theory, that's and in the end of the day, there's no two ways about it. That's how the body works, and obviously there's other factors that come into play, like your hormone levels and your stress. And if you're feeding your body with shit food, regardless of whether you're taking in less than you're burning, you're going to sleep like shit, perform like shit, your hormones are going to be out of whack. So that's where I'm really big on what I call the 90-10 rule. So I think that 90% of your food should always be coming from nutrient-dense, whole, like clean fruits, whereas that 10% could be for a glass of wine with dinner if that's what you enjoy, or back home, go and catch up with a few mates and grab a few beers or whatever it may be. Because for me, that's going to be something that I know I can do for the rest of my life rather than someone telling me or me telling you, you need to eat this. What I give you a plan, you follow this. And then as soon as you go off that, in your mind, you're like, I've fucked up.
Yeah.
Or if you go off it, you're not on the diet anymore. So I just don't think that's a...
No, that makes sense. Yeah. You want to be able to stick to it and not keep going up and down, you know?
Exactly. It's a yo-yo effect otherwise, isn't it? Yeah.
It's odd, isn't it? Well, this for me.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to talking about some boxing. When you were growing up, you obviously started boxing at an early age. Was there anyone that you looked up to as a boxer? Was there someone that you kind of really idolized or tried to emulate your
style? Not really. Like you mentioned earlier on, Roy Jones. I just love watching Roy Jones.
If you guys haven't watched Roy Jones highlights on YouTube, then make sure you finish listening to this and watching this and then go and watch that.
Yeah, Roy Jones is amazing. I loved him, but there was no one I used to really look up to or like, heroes or idolize as a fighter. No, not really. And I'll tell you too, I didn't really like it. Didn't really like to watch it. I used to be in tournaments and I was big for my age, so I was always the last one on.
Okay.
Like seeing the schoolboy championships, I'll be the last fight on, and there'll be 60 fights. I'll be sitting there watching 60 fights. I don't want to watch any more fights, you know what I mean?
It's funny you say that. There's a number of athletes that I've spoken to that some of them just absolutely love watching the sport right. that they play in and or that they compete in, whereas others, similar, like they love competing, but they could not be bothered watching it at all. They have no interest in watching it outside. And I guess a lot of the time, if your whole day is consumed by boxing, the last thing you probably want to do is then go home and watch boxing, or go and watch more boxing. Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of like, I like watching MMA now because...
That was another question I was going to ask you. That interests you, the UFC and MMA, yeah?
I like that because it's like, it's obviously got like boxing in it, but it's way more in it, so it's not as boring or as repetitive as watching boxing fights. So I'm enjoying watching the UFC now, MMA.
Awesome. So I've got a few more questions. The next thing I wanted to quickly talk about is your gym. So we were just out there before in Santa Monica in California, Box and Burn.
Yeah,
Box and Burn. So is there one location now?
There's two locations. One in Brentwood, like 4 miles from here as well, which is another very nice area.
It is. And what's the concept for someone that's listening or watching? What's the concept of Box and Burn?
Yeah, it's boxing fitness, you know, not getting punched in the head anymore. I'm not a fan of getting punched in the face anymore. No, so it's like, boxing fitness where we do all of the things that I would do in a camp with the boxing work, and then the strength work as well. It's all combined into one session. So all mixed up, and we've got the best boxing class in the world, I guarantee you that. Not the best business model, but the best boxing class. And why I say it's not the best business model is because we've got 4 to 6 trainers teaching one class. So you're getting the one-on-one work, which obviously makes it an amazing class. But like I said, it's tough for a business.
Expenses are a little higher.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, like I think, by the sounds of it, we both listen and consume a lot of business-related stuff. The more and more that I kind of listen to people that are doing really well and successful with what they're doing, if you're trying to give someone a service, it's about giving them the best service. Yeah. So if you're trying to give someone an experience, it's about giving them the best experience. And eventually, the financial side of things is going to come.
Yeah, definitely.
Like if I come in and do a session with you at Box and Burn and it's the best class I've ever done, I'm going to go and tell people about it, regardless of, you know, that class might have... You could have made more money off it if there was less trainers, but it might not have been a good experience.
It's like this quote I posted the other day: never start a company with the goal of getting rich. Your goal should be making something you believe in and making a company that will last. You know,
100%.
And that's it. We never come into this to me and my business partner Kevin Watson. We never come into this to get rich. We were doing it for donations only when we first started at the beach.
Okay.
Not making any money, but then we created something that we love and we think it's the last and it's going to be, and like I say, it's the best. So the money's starting to come. We're doing all right now, but like at one time we weren't making anything because that's what we were about, you know?
Yeah, but if you didn't love it, you wouldn't have stuck it out.
Right, like we say about the dieting as well. No,
yeah.
It's like I say, the basics, just fucking do the basics.
100%. And you've got a podcast, Boxing Life, and we were talking about this before. You're going to start uploading stuff again. But some of the guests that he's had on the show is just fucking insane. So after this, again, after you finish watching or listening to this, go and check out, subscribe to Boxing Life. The content on there is awesome. And I'm sure there's a lot more to come.
We're
talking about podcasting before and how we think, well, I definitely think it's just going to grow.
Yeah.
More and more people are starting to listen to podcasts and consume audio while they're in the car and or traveling or training or walking, whatever it may be. So go and check that out as well.
I tell people, so we do a Boxing Burn Academy, which is our education program where we teach personal trainers how to teach boxing. I told you we're coming to Melbourne next year. It's called the Boxing Burn Academy. And on that, I do a talk about how to promote and brand yourself as a top fitness professional. I do like 40-minute talks. I've got quite a bit of experience in that. Everyone's sitting there and I'll say to them all, I'll say, put your hand up if you listen to the podcast. 90% of the people put their hand up. And I'll say, now put your hand up if you've got a podcast. No hands ever go up.
Mm.
I say, why? Why have you not got a podcast?
Yeah.
You know, you're passionate about this. It's free. It's great for SEO. It gets your name on Google, iTunes. It's everywhere, you know. Start a podcast, you know. And I really recommend everyone starting a podcast.
Definitely. And, you know, how long have you been doing yours for?
Like 3 years now.
3 years, yeah. I'm getting, I think I'm getting close to 3 years now. And something that Gary Vee says a lot, and what he does a lot, keep in mind he has a team of a lot of people doing this for him, but even if right now we were recording a video, or you were doing a talk and you were recording a video, or someone that's a trainer or someone out there that's recording a video or working with a client, you can then take that audio and use that as a podcast. It doesn't need to be a professionally, professionally done podcast. It can just be content that you're putting out and you're redistributing it across all different platforms.
Yeah, definitely. And what you can do with it is, just let's say, for instance, when you were giving your opinions on diet and lifestyle change, what I'll do with my podcast, I'll send a clip to a lady who helps me, and she'll transcribe it into a blog.
Okay, yeah.
Now I'll put the blog out, I'll put the blog on the YouTube, I'll put it on the Instagram, put it everywhere, little clips of the video goes everywhere, the audio clip, and now you get everywhere. And
now you've all of a sudden you've got 5 or 6 different pieces of content.
Yes, and so the people who don't like watching can either listen or they can even read about it. You know?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. So it's very valuable for not just in this industry, but in any industry, people are doing this.
I agree, All right, before we wrap things up, I've got a few different names or a few different topics that I want to just bring up, and I just want your opinion. I don't even have any questions around it. I just want to bring them up and see what your thoughts are. Firstly, the Conor McGregor and Mayweather fight. What was your thoughts going into it, and what is your thoughts after it?
I absolutely loved that fight. I loved everything about it.
Nice two of us.
I get shit off, because the boxing community all hated on it, you know, and I'm big in the boxing community, so I got a little shit for that, but I loved the fight. I loved the build-up, even though it was cheesy. I loved how much money they made. I really enjoyed watching the fight. I was nervous before. The got my emotions, you know, and in marketing, it's about building emotional relationships and all that, so they got everyone's emotion. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, Conor McGregor, every time he comes to Los Angeles, he trains in Boxing Burn.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah, so he'd come to the gym, and I remember he was telling me, when he was in the gym, he said, I'm going to try and fight Floyd Mayweather. And I was like, oh, right. I was thinking, oh, absolutely no chance. And I was laughing, telling people. Next thing, he's matched with Mayweather. But yeah, I loved that fight, and I loved it all about it. And I've been putting on my Instagram as well, what do you think about Mayweather McGregor 2? And again, getting loads of shit. But I would absolutely love to see it.
I think, like you said, like, you know, you might get shit for it, but name one person that wouldn't watch it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was just telling everyone, like, you know, are you going to watch it, or are you going to pee?
And what are your thoughts after the fight? How do you think Conor went, and did he go as well as what you thought, or did he do better than what you thought?
He's done way better than what I thought. He won like 2 or 3 rounds.
Beat I would almost say 4.
Is that what it was?
I'm definitely, you know, more than me, obviously, but going off what I've read after it and watching the fight myself, it just seemed like he won the first four rounds.
Yeah. No, I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I was gobsmacked. Like, whoa, he's winning these rounds. He's winning these rounds. And I thought he did really well. And he hit Mayweather with an uppercut. Like, I was like, wow. But the thing is, right, with when you turn professional, like MMA is a different sport. In boxing, when you turn professional, you start off, you might have 2 4 round fights. Then you move up to 6 round fights. Yeah, then you move up to 8 rounds. Then 10 rounds. By the time you're fighting 12 rounds, you've had 16 to 20 fights, right? This is his first fight. That's why he got so tired, you know? He did amazing. He's absolutely amazing.
Unreal. And, you know, going off what we spoke before about people tuning in to watch a fight, this is one from left field, but did you watch any, or did you see any of this stuff around Logan Paul versus KSI, the two YouTubers that had a fight? I mean, like, the numbers, the numbers from what I've read, it's fucking good.
Oh,
in terms of people like buying the fight, and you know, the early rounds, like you said, they gassed out relatively quickly, but the early rounds, like, Logan Paul didn't look too bad.
Yeah.
And that's his first fight.
Yeah, I didn't watch the fight. I watched the full build up to that fight again, and I absolutely love it. I love shit like that. These are two millionaires, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have to do this, and they're getting on, and they're putting their reputation on the line for nothing. I've got nothing but respect for them for doing that fight, you know. It's huge. And yeah, I heard the fight was a bit of a mess. What do you expect, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, check it out. Like, I think it's I think you can actually watch it now just for free on YouTube, but the first 2 to 3 rounds Logan actually looked good. The KSI, the dude he fought after the second round, after he realised that Logan was kicking his ass, came out and just made it a scrappy fight. It was shit to watch. But up until that point, like, you watched Logan, and after 4 months of training in your first fight, I was surprised at how good he actually looked as a... And I think they're planning a rematch in LA. You might have to get Logan in to come train at your gym.
He follows me on Twitter, so I tweeted him and asked if he wanted help with his training camp, but he never replied. I would love to train him just because of the publicity that shit brings, you know.
Oh, fucking nice. Definitely. And then the last one I wanted to bring up, and we spoke about him before, is Brendan Schaub.
Yeah.
So those that listen to my podcast or follow me on Instagram know how much I love stand-up comedy, and one of my favorite podcasts is The Fighter and the Kid. And one of their hosts, Brendan Schaub, used to be a UFC fighter, and Tony was his striking coach. So what was he like to train? You mentioned that he still comes into the gym every second day or so, yeah. And he's one of your best friends now.
Yeah, Brendan's great, and it was great to train him. You know, that's what got me into being a fan of MMA. We had a mutual friend called Tom Watson who was in the UFC. He was sponsored by the same Lonsdale, the same company as me. And Tom introduced me to Brendan, and Brendan in a session and he loved it and he wanted to bring me on, so we worked together, we became very good friends, and I started studying UFC and MMA and I was with him for his last three fights. He won the first one, he got ripped off his second one, and then the last one was a disaster against Ronda Rousey's boyfriend now, Travis Brown. It was a disaster, but it was a great experience, and you know, just being in the cage side in the corner for these big, massive fights.
Yeah, what an experience.
And then as well, like, now Brendan is absolutely killing it in what he's doing now. Like, I mean, very, very successful, which I'm really happy for. I'm really happy for him because it's like 99.9% of fighters leave fighting and they've got nothing to go fall back on, you know, where in boxing and MMA. And for him to leave and come out, like, successful, you know, and that number, 99.9%, seems, I see loads of fighters doing it, but you don't see the other fighters that's not doing it, no?
Exactly right, yeah.
And for him to be killing it now, you know, it's really good, and he's helping me grow my business as well.
Oh, likewise, mate. Yeah. Like, you're obviously doing extremely well, so congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Well, guys, that is it for today's podcast episode and the interview here with Tony. So Tony, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's definitely been one of the more enjoyable episodes I've had, and hopefully we can catch up again maybe next year.
You're trying to see the rest of the people you've had on your podcast being boring bastards.
No.
Yes, you are.
No. Don't throw me under the bus. Come on.
No, but thank you, mate. Thank you for having me. Any time, next time you're in town, we'll do some boxing.
100%. Guys, thanks for tuning in today. Do me a couple favors. Make sure you visit those links in the show notes below. Go and give Tony a follow on Instagram. If you've enjoyed today's episode, take a screenshot of the show, post it on your Instagram story, tag myself, tag Tony. If you've got any questions for myself or Tony, either contact me or contact or Tony by a DM, and we'll be sure to get back to you. But thanks for tuning in. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, and look forward to chatting to you again in the next episode.